Golden Hawk here. Welcome to Conversations with Golden Hawk. So who do you need when you come undone? Who do you call when you come undone? That is what this show is all about. Tonight, helping me express my journey and share with you some stuff I learned on the inner planes is the enchanting Janine Kimmel. Thanks for joining me and everyone. Janine, welcome to the show.
Hi, Goldie. Thank you. On a beautiful evening here. It's a pretty song. Really pretty.
Definitely. You know? Definitely.
Yeah. Very enchanting, actually.
Oh, right on. Well,
yeah,
and right.
Yeah, it's very
and,
it's,
and coming undone should be an enchanting. At this point in the game, we should be enchanted by it. I agree.
So beautiful. Yeah, yeah. Oh, and on that note, you know, boy, does that add richness to the whole thing, because one of my favorite quotes, Goldie, is Carl Jung tells that great story about enchantment is the oldest form of medicine. And
nice.
He's had the most incredible experiences, not even knowing that he was enchanting a client, and her symptoms went completely away. So that's amazing that, you know, I really do believe that enchantment is an old form of medicine and really
Indeed.
Makes a difference.
Grab some water, babe.
Okay, I will do that.
Okay, thank you, love. Yeah, no, because I can feel it in my throat. I'm like, oh, drink, babe. So, no, right on. You know, there's a lot to share. The premise of tonight's show, you know, if you had to kind of sum it up in a sentence, is basically presence versus mind control. And now there are obvious differences, but I think what I really want to kind of try and convey tonight to the best of my ability is how much truly mind control triggers presence and the importance of mind control in the sense of, because it's a part of all of our experiences right now, it's not necessarily something that should, quote unquote, only be feared. It really is a frequency and a experience that can absolutely lead to presence, and which to me becomes the mastering of mind control. Are you with me, Jay?
I am here. Yep.
Okay. It just was very, very quiet. I get nervous
listening.
Now. And oh, you're sweet. Okay. So a couple of weeks ago, actually, it's 2 weeks ago tonight. This whole show was birthed from an experience I had, and Janine has graciously, you know, she's always so graciously. He's going to just let me share the story, And then we're going to kind of play with it and, you know, kind of pick it apart in pieces. And then, you know, we're open to callers and talking about other aspects. Because it was such an extraordinary experience for me on both counts. I went deeply into fear, and I experienced deeply my presence in the heart of the experience of the fear. So instead of going around this, let's just get right into this. Okay,
sure.
So 2 weeks ago, Friday night, I decided to ingest magic mushrooms. And I, to give a little bit of a background, you know, I have been doing magic mushrooms since my teens. And the normal experience that I've had from doing basically hundreds of trips has been I would see things. Mostly the things that I would see were very Native American in the patterns. I would be able to, like, kind of paint with energy in the air. It would open up my visuals very creatively, very colorfully. And one of the key points about tripping for most people, but myself as an experience, was I would laugh my ass off on magic mushrooms. I mean, it just has always cracked me up to do these things. So that's kind of the premise going into 2 weeks ago Friday night, because that was not my experience. My experience was basically, I did it as a T form, which was the first time I've ever done that. And according to the internet, by making it a T, it increases the psilocybin, or I don't know if I'm saying that word right, but it increases its hallucinogenic energies or whatever, elements. So within 20 minutes of drinking the tea, I was nauseous. Now, that is very much a part of all mushroom trips. What you normally do is you get nauseous in about the first 20 to 40 minutes, and then it's like it moves through you, and you stop being nauseous, and you start, you know, having, you know, the peak experiences. Okay, this trip, I was nauseous the entire 4 hours that I was awake.
Mm-hmm.
And what essentially happened in a nutshell is I drank the tea, I began to trip, I got nauseous. It never went away, so I immediately kind of knew, uh-oh, this isn't going to be good. But as a seasoned veteran tripper, I know that once you ingest it, there's really nothing you can do other than go to sleep. I mean, you can go to sleep. At least I can. I can sleep with anything, God bless it. So as pretty much as soon as the trip started, I was seeing things in the air, but they were not Native American colorful things. What they were vortexes of energy. Like there was a big vortex of energy over the television. Scott had a big vortex of energy over him. The fan, we have a ceiling fan in the bedroom. Had to turn that off. It was completely making me nauseous because I was watching it going around, and it wasn't just going around. It was literally creating portals. And coupled with the nausea, it was, you know, I was literally like, oh, hold on, girl, hold on. This, I just intuitively knew it did not feel right. So then at about 40 minutes in, I noticed when I shut my eyes, it helped a little bit with the nausea. And I was definitely seeing stuff, but about 40 minutes in, the best way to describe it is, I basically opened a door. It was the fourth dimension. There was a demonic pep rally. And as soon as I opened the door, every demon in that space was focused on me.
Mm.
Now, I have not experienced, you know, like I said, I'm used to cracking up and seeing beautiful things. This demonic space was essentially, to be honest, there's so much to share about this. Okay. The first thing that came to my mind once again was when I opened the door and felt all the attention on me and felt that it was all negative attention, or I shouldn't say negative. The better word is hostile. It was hostile attention on me. My initial reaction was, you know, fight this with, you know, positiveness. That just was not working because what really ended up kicking in initially was just sheer terror. These beings were, it seemed to me as the trip went on for 4 hours, this is what I was experiencing, and it seemed to me what happened is every horrific thing I had ever seen in a video, in a movie, in, you know, reading up on MK Ultra stuff, all of these pictures in my mind were like being flashed to me in like a crazy chaotic energy. The two that stand out the most was the clown from Stephen King's It. He was in there and he was very vocal with me, and it was really quite unnerving, because the vocals that he was saying to me was, two things I remember most of all. It was one that I should kill myself, that I wasn't worth living for. And the second thing was that I would never achieve my dreams. That it was all a lie. I would never get everything I'm working for. There were flashes of people eating babies' brains. Baphomet, the pictures of Baphomet, which were different pictures of the devil, you know, half man, half goat. Just incredibly demonic things. Now, there was one thing that was I kind of got afterwards. All of these beings were a cartoon. It was not a like movie. It was a cartoon, which I thought was kind of interesting because in the midst of going through this for, I would say, time was very hard to conceive because once I knew that this was my experience and my journey, and I knew I could not do anything about it, even though about 3 hours in, I did figure out that, okay, wait a minute, I can do things. I was under my earthing sheets. I had organite in my hand. I was holding a piece of organite. I had put on that Italian gentleman that George Cavassalis interviewed recently. The piano player.
Right.
I had bought a piece of his music that was literally just piano. Yeah. It wasn't the woman singing or any other instruments. And it was actually a very good vibe and frequency because of the simplicity of just being like basically one key at a time. Mm-hmm. I could handle it, but there were even times I had to just take it out of my ears because I was literally being bombarded sensationally with in all honesty, what I now know to be mind control. Because it was like every fear I had ever dreamt up or imagined happening to somebody else, I was either seeing or hearing. There were screams going on, children screaming, animal screams. It was so incredibly challenging. And because there was a point in time, and again, I don't know what that point was, but there was a point in time where I was in fear, my heart was pumping out of my heart, and it was interesting because my mind went to all the shows that I watch, all the series that I've watched, and because I tend to watch things that are very paranormal, whether it's Fringe or The X-Files or all the Star Treks, you know, with having, you know, alternate universes. And one of the first things that came to me was an episode of Star Trek Voyager, which I actually rewatched the episode today because I wanted to refresh myself on it. There was an artificial intelligence in this episode that had been created to keep a species, these people, alive after they had, like, basically destroyed the environment on their planet. So this way they could be in stasis, their mind would be, you know, active until their planet was able to be, you know, they were able to come out of stasis and inhabit the planet again. And the computer that was working with their minds was working with anything they created, it adapted to. So when they had fears, it created their fears. And that episode popped into my head, and it was like I kind of instantly realized these are all my fears. These are, it's all me. And I don't really understand the nature of why this happened, but something about that comforted me because it didn't feel like it was anything bigger than me. It just felt like it was all me. Because after I had that visual and that connection of, okay, this is all of my fears, I started calming down and going, okay, what are you going to do? You got to help yourself here, Goldie, because one of the key parts of the episode that I'm referring to, which is called The Thaw, by the way, is that two of the people that were in stasis died in stasis because they were scared to death. Now, it totally struck me that it wasn't that these images were not real or real. I wasn't so much concerned with real or not real. I was more concerned with, can you physically hurt me? Because once I kind of got that they can't physically hurt me, what I can do is believe what I'm witnessing and then allow my body to respond by literally being scared to death. And it absolutely felt like I've heard some teachers say that we have points in our lives, designated points in our lives that are exit points, and that if we choose, we can actually leave, you know, we can die in those points and leave. And I got the sense that that night was if I wanted to, that was an exit point. But I had a fear that if I died in fear like that, that even once I left my body, because this was not of the third dimension, this was multidimensional and fourth dimensional, that it was going to follow me. So it became, okay, that's not an option. You have to live through this, Goldie. There is no dying. And as soon as I kind of made that choice for myself, I started going, okay, what are you going to do? And the first thing I was like, you've got to calm your body down because it is my body responding to this fear. And I started, you know, consciously inhaling in through my nose, out through my mouth, a rhythmic breathing that was hands down. When I did that, literally, I felt, I guess the best way to put it is, I went from experience, being in the middle of this experience with all these demons surrounding me, to witnessing myself being in the middle of the experience with all the demons surrounding me. It's like I left my body in the non-physical space. And as soon as I was witnessing it, the answer was very clear. Just accept this. This is an initiation of some kind or an integration of some kind. You just got to accept it. So, like I said, I had the Organite in my hand. I'd be listening to the Italian guy sometimes, but then I'd have to take him out because it was a very sensitive time happening because when I opened my eyes, everything basically stopped. But it was a weird sensation because the whole trip, it was like I was being lulled to go to sleep. And there was a fear of me that if I went to sleep in that state, I wasn't going to wake up. So I was doing everything I could in my power, just keep staying awake, just keep staying awake, just keep staying awake. But it was the key for all of this was that I got was that the frequencies, because first of all, I could, when I was in the witnessing part, I could literally, like I could hear a tone that I know is a vibrational sound, and it, the best way to describe it was it felt like the tone of suicide. Like everybody that is suicidal, it's like it just felt like to me they go into a frequency, and I was tapped into that frequency. Another frequency I was tapped into felt very much what people feel like being locked up in an asylum. Imprisoned, you know, inside their mind, physically imprisoned, but it wasn't a prison, you know, with bars, but I could just sense, it was like, these are the voices of misunderstood beings, you know, who, like maybe their parents don't know how to handle them, or, you know, they're, you know, maybe they have schizophrenia, but they're misunderstood, and you know, it's very hard to explain because in the space that I was in, it was like I seemed to know a whole lot about what was going on in an environment that was so incredibly hell bent on me killing myself. And, you know, I mean, I had spoken to Janine, I think like a week before. Remember when we watched The Wall? And I said, I've reached a point where, you know, suicide is no longer an option.
Right. But it's interesting because, yes, and that was prior, maybe like 3 weeks before, but.
Okay.
Yeah. But, you know, I mean, it's so interesting because I was just thinking to myself, prior to ingesting the tea or the liquid, had you had any preconceived, like looking back now, obviously, not.
No, that's a great question. Yes, please,
yeah, like,
yes.
Yeah, looking back now, because for me, the interesting part is since that time and looking back when you can make kind of sense out of this if it's possible, but I was just wondering if you had any preconceived awareness or what was going on prior, or was it a real surprise entering this world?
Well, first of all, literally 6 hours prior to ingesting the tea, I was in the forest. I felt fantastic. And because anytime you're going to do mind-altering drugs, it's always said that you should really go in a good space. If you go in with something bothering you or you're in a, you know, melancholy, it will just kind of expand on what you are.
Okay.
From a conscious point of view, I was feeling great. I was feeling great. And see, what's so amazing about it is, to be quite honest, My dear friend Lilu from Facebook, she had wrote something on the thread that I had wrote about after this happened that, you know, you can't reach the fifth dimension through mushrooms. And she's absolutely correct. And I understand that. What's so amazing, though, is the mushrooms triggered a presence in me. And today when I was in the woods, I actually got, you know how I'm always saying befriend a tree because if you get stuck multidimensionally, I can honestly tell you, I don't know for sure, but there's a subtle feeling inside me that the trees rallied for me when I was in that pep rally of demons, and that it was them that told, because trees, you know, oxygen, breathing. It's funny because a tree didn't just show up, like an oak didn't stand in front of me and go, here, you know, wrap your arms around me and you'll be okay. But but in all honesty, something came and brought a presence to me. And I know it's my presence.
Yeah, I was going to say the tree presence is a part of you. You know, you resonate so much.
Exactly.
You know, it's tree presence, Goldie presence, tree presence, Goldie presence, you know.
No, exactly,
yeah,
exactly.
Yeah,
it's
yeah.
hard to distinguish, but it just struck me today that you, because I didn't make that association at all. And, you know, because when Lilu said that, I really respect that, because I am not using ayahuasca, because I had a bad trip on ayahuasca too, but I was almost prepared for that on some level. I was not prepared for this one because I've taken mushrooms before. Because in my humble opinion, I think the astral planes and the fourth dimensional planes right now are like literally being manipulated purposely through, you know, the powers that be, that if you're going to do these types of things, it's almost like, you know, 10 years ago when I was tripping, having a great time was what my soul wanted me to do. Now, because see, I don't believe it was a mistake that
I went through this.
Yeah, me either, because in all honesty, I basically went through this night and once I understood the dynamic at play, which was that it was, first of all happening in my mind. As soon as I opened my eyes, it was not happening. Another thing I noticed was I never lost consciousness. Like, I was always able, in the midst of them throwing audio and video at me of dark proportions, I never lost myself.
Your recall is, you don't have any, like, I don't remember blackout time, or it's all recall.
No,
it's good.
Not to my knowledge, right. I mean, I guess I wouldn't.
Yeah.
I mean, I did after 4 hours from sheer exhaustion and being nauseous.
Right.
I remember going, I'm just going to go to sleep, you know, because I had a fear that if I went to sleep, it would, like, somehow take me over more because I wasn't awake, but that was all just a fear, and that there was really no truth in it. I mean, because I woke up at, like, 3 o'clock in the morning. I remember I opened my eyes, and it was like, oh, it's over. Oh, my God, thank God it's over.
Yeah.
I was so happy. And throughout the next couple of days, there was such a powerful presence of confidence and self-awareness of mind control.
That's very significant, because it's what you come away with, I think.
Exactly.
You know, yes, the experience sounds challenging and difficult, and I'm very curious, because from my perspective, I can't help but think about the mushrooms and their part in this, and their way you worked with the mushrooms, because I do believe that, you know, they had a purpose. You chose it. They worked with you. This is what comes up. And then coming out of it, listening to it, I'm going, whoa, you know, rough. But coming out of it, you know, it's almost like when you said something about when that door opened and there you were, I'm thinking to myself, oh, Goldie needed her sword, you know. But in some ways, I think I like, you know, that sword of the warrior, the spiritual warrior. But I think, or of organicness, or of authenticity.
Yes.
And so I really feel that was present. It was just like you, as the hero in the journey, finding your presence and then coming out of it. I think that's really significant to hear how you felt for the next following days, because I think that, you know, I don't think it was a mistake either. I think these, we consciously choose. So, you know, you came out of it changed, initiated, possibly
yes.
not as afraid anymore of these things because you recognize them as mental mind construct, mind control, whatever. That interests me, how you were
No, that's exactly what you just said. So I really did, I had a better understanding that the key about mind control is you got to buy into it. It's like it can offer a thought, it can offer a belief, but, you know, it's like it was funny because when, you know, when the It Clown was just bombarding me with, you know, suicidal thoughts, and it's so funny because I have spent easily a third of my life being suicidal. I mean, you kind of laugh and go, well, I guess you would think that would be the time to do it. You know, shut the goddamn thing off. Let's kill ourselves. But and that's why I also say it's all self-created. It's like, this is my little pocket of space. These are my thoughts. Mm-hmm. And
residue, you know, like a residue that, you know, it's almost like clearing on a major level of, you know, you said like a third of your life. I mean, so that's a buildup. To me, that's
exactly
a buildup.
Yeah.
So here it is in your face, in your mind construct, in your, you know, field, in your, you know, this interesting delivery of an animated, you know, cartoon like.
Yeah.
That in itself, when I heard that, I was like, well, that's different. You know, that kind of takes it out of a realm of like real time for me would have been real people, real clowns, and it's all
exactly.
cartoon-like. So
no, absolutely.
Yeah, yeah, but think of the buildup of energy that we all layer on top of ourselves of these, you know, the fears and the suicidal thoughts and the, you know, the fear of all
the doubts, all our doubts. I mean, it was
and all that cruelty that repels us all, but like you feel almost quote like, well, what can I do? And I don't know. There's something there for me too, because those kinds of things really do, they imprison us, they hold us, because they're horrible. So you are confronting them, you're confronting them and coming out the other side, you know. And I'm thinking, because I'm nature oriented and plant oriented, and I'm thinking, those mushrooms, well, you know, you are like, you know, they were working with you, the mushroom.
Absolutely, absolutely.
The mushroom energy.
Yes. Because it was time for this initiation to happen. Because, you know, I've had fourth dimensional experiences, and one of the things I definitely want to share with the audience when we take one of these, you know, whether it's organic through a mushroom or LSD or when we take something that we know is going to open those doorways,
right?
At this juncture in our frequency journey, you know, it's almost like, for me, it almost feels like, well, you should expect it to go dark because the whole planet, for me, feels like it's purging its darkness. And I'm sure it's happening, you know, on a whole galactic scale. You know, it's not just our planet, it's our solar system and, you know, our galaxy and our universe and, you know, so
I
to be mindful.
Any authentic exploration and journey is going to include dark and, you know, avoid it.
Right,
shouldn't expect to avoid it. You know, have total empathy going, whoa, you know, that was some rough stuff to confront, but I think you can't avoid it. I mean, it's going to show up.
Well,
eventually.
I'm a seeker. Yeah. I mean, because to be quite honest, I'm a seeker, and my whole gig is, you know, I'm always saying I can't leave any pieces of myself out there, because what I truly believe happened ultimately is that these pieces of my fear, doubt, guilt, shame, and by the way, mind control actually becomes stronger with guilt. But guilt seems to be a food, because, like I said, there were certain things going on, and then there was this frequency river that was separate from what was happening to me. That was a sound. It had shapes, huh, and all a separate geometry, different than my own little hell. and I could distinguish the two, because once I accepted all these demons as myself and kind of just said, you know, Goldie, it is, I have the presence to witness them, and by witnessing them, validate them. Because that's what it feels like is happening on an energetic level. Carlos Castaneda talks about when you focus on something, the quantum entanglement. And by quantumly entangling with our shadow side, just by witnessing it without, because I figured out very quickly, there is no fighting the fourth dimension, because like in my own head, I went, this can't be about strength, because I can imagine a 70-mile-an-hour wind, and they can probably imagine 170-mile-an-hour. You know what I'm saying? It's not strength in imagination. It's anything goes. So I went, that can't
right.
be.
Right.
It was, you know, it was Roadrunner and Wile E. Coyote. It's like, because I was like, I can't fight these things. This isn't
right.
in
That's
this
so
dimension. Strength does not play a part.
No.
But the truth, the strength.
I feel like you did a thesis in 4 hours. It's like
exactly. Well, because I'm such a thinker, Jay. I am such a thinker on that. Once I was at the space of, because you know it's so funny. My whole mantra to everybody that you know I share with and talk with is, you got to accept your own shadow side. You got to accept your own shadow side. When it feels accepted, you know, invite it back into the table, invite it back into your home, let it sit at the table. And it's so funny, I often have the visual of your character from your book, the gooey-eyed girl.
Gooey-eyed. Oh, Jelly Pain.
Jelly Pain.
Right.
And that, when you accept your darkness back in, whether you're doing it emotionally and visually, emotionally and
okay.
auditorily, it's not about making it become light. It literally is a game, and I say that with not lightly, but that is how I see life. The
right.
game is, can you accept the darkness exactly as it is? And for me, that it was like, Goldie, you just got to accept all these painful visuals and audios. Just
okay.
accept them and witness them, because I really got the sense that it was almost like, yeah, this is going to sound crazy, but like I was the queen of the kingdom,
okay.
and that if I got scared, then I didn't deserve to be queen of the kingdom. If
wow.
I held composure, then I could be queen of this kingdom. And once I got that, I won't say that I wasn't not afraid anymore. There was fear throughout this whole thing, but there was a definite sense of presence in me, around me, that I knew as long as my body, it was almost like I could delegate it to just my mind. My body did not take on the fear, because if it did, I would have had a massive heart attack and died. I mean, that was
right.
really what I felt the potential was. That was what was up for me, you know. And
I love when you said, Goldie, I love when you said, because this is, I could have created a 70-mile-an-hour wind, but then they could have just created or could have created a 170-mile-an-hour wind. I think that's a great analogy for sort of the, Okay. Now what? You know how? Now what do I? You know,
exactly.
I think out of the box. Right. Or this isn't. Yeah. This is way different than how you play the game. In supposed the mind control state or the this realm here. You know, it just, to me, that's a very interesting sort of riddle. Like, and in every great story of, say, the queen and the kingdom, and, you know, it's for her to solve the, okay, queen, here you go. Here's your riddle. You know, you're in a jam.
Exactly, babe.
You could create a 70-mile-an-hour wind, but they can create a 170-mile-an-hour wind. What do you do now? And it's like, nothing? Accept it? You know, what do you do? I think that's so... That's like, to me, part of the learning here, or a major part of the learning here, coming out of this.
I agree.
So
babe.
I'm curious. So, what do you think about that? Like, what did you find yourself like just saying the negative is the negative, or
I would because I could barely say that. What I would just do is because I have said to so many people, like I said, that mantra. I went, live it, Goldie.
Okay,
yeah. Don't talk it and not live it. Accept these experiences. And it's interesting because it's a definite surrender, but it's so funny because it's not a surrender to, okay, take me over and kill me and take me to this bad place.
No.
It's quite the opposite. It's an acceptance. I mean, it's a surrender to a judgment that – these are not a part of me, but the reality is I know you are. I know you are. And I, you know, I've got the mother load tonight to come into me, but I'm ready for this because for the last 14 years, I've prepared myself by spending significant time in the forest, even though I couldn't have been in a more technological space. Because at Scott's house, there's all sorts of technology, and I never organized his place like I did my house and his mother's. I just have a few pieces in the bedroom. So, you know, that was the piece that I grabbed. But, you know, I didn't organize the place. You know, there were vortexes opening up all over the TV, and, it was like I really got the sense of It really wanted me to be afraid. And by the way, it's relentless. It even in my acceptance of it, it's not like it went, okay, listen, she's not buying this. You know, we surrender.
Yeah.
It doesn't surrender. And I think it doesn't surrender. Now, let me rephrase this. I feel it doesn't surrender because in actuality, it is a creation of fear. It really... What was the line that? Wait a minute, Janeway said this in the episode that I watched, the captain of the Voyager.
Yeah.
Fear only exists for one reason: to be conquered. Now, in all honesty, I wouldn't look at it as conquered from a, you know, like 70-mile-an-hour wind cut his head off.
Right.
That's not how you conquer fear. The way you conquer fear, I mean, is ultimately, you know, and this is going to sound crazy, but it's the truth, is you love it.
Right.
You love fear back into yourself.
That doesn't sound crazy at all. That's that's physics.
It is. It's physics. And it's part of the integration and physics, exactly, because like I said, it was interesting. My fears were at a different frequency than the suicidal verbiage and the being locked up in an asylum. Those were the two frequencies, and it was those two frequencies that for me felt were feeding off of guilt. And and doubt. Doubt is another huge,
big time control.
The mind control. Yeah, mind control looks for doubt, and then it's like
it's an eddy.
It's an eddy. It's an eddy for it to stop and focus a more intensified. I don't know how that works. If it's nanobites, I don't know. It doesn't matter, not to me, anyways.
No. It's just such a great coming out of this with the ability to really explain more and with more clarity and with more, you know, how mind control, how fear, how doubt, how shame, how guilt, all holds, you know, any of us. And, you know, you went through this, you come out it, and this is what you bring. And, I remember when we were having this conversation, maybe it was Monday, and, you know, you were, I didn't know any of the details, but something extraordinary was happening just in our conversation that I felt, that I felt was sort of left over expansion of what you experienced, because then, and then I felt, isn't this interesting? Now I'm being affected. And it was in a completely, you know, again, expansive, transcendent, we were having fun, literally, and the awarenesses were just flying, and I was sharing with you, and it just felt like the emanation from your experience was still occurring, and it still is occurring, you know, and it still is occurring, because now you're sharing tonight, so.
Well, and it feels like it's a frequency that, you know, it's whose time has come. I mean, it's like, it's almost like, all right, you talk to Goldie, can you walk it? And I started, you know, because what I invite everybody to do is see what your mantras are. Like, you know, because
it's a good one.
It seems like it'll show up exactly for you how you believe it will show up.
Mm-hmm.
Because, you know, the tree thing, I mean, and I just got that today. It was like, wow, I mean, I'm always saying befriend a tree, and I told you, you know, recently I cut all the vines off the trees, and, you know, I've been freeing trees that have fallen trees on them so that they can grow back straight up and get the sunlight, and, you know, and I was like, I feel like on some level I'm freeing myself by doing this.
Not on some level.
Right on. No,
you
right
definitely,
on.
You know, it's one and the same, basically, you know?
Yeah.
So,
no, right on.
Yeah.
Well, and it's an interesting thing, because like we were saying at the beginning, I don't, quote unquote, Mother Nature didn't save me from this. But Mother Nature absolutely had a play in my ability to save myself in this, because it is the frequency that I have when I'm in Mother Nature that I was able to bring out during this trip that basically gave me the stamina and the endurance to continue to breathe, because it was almost like it was a game of, you know, you go into presence, you go into fear, you go into presence, you go into fear.
Yeah.
You know, it wasn't like I just hit presence and skated the rest of the ride. But what did happen was the moment I went into presence for the first time, I knew that is the answer. The answer is you must stabilize your body, because this is in your mind. Let it play out in your mind. Don't let it play out in your body, because then you're living the fear.
Right. Wow.
Yeah. It was pretty wild.
It is pretty wild.
I know. You know, we took a vacation from, we've decided no more. And what am I getting next? I'm getting a deprivation tank next. Well, because I'll be honest with you, I just love this exploration of self. An interesting thing happened to me in the forest, right? I had this bad elbow. It happened to me today. I have a bad elbow. Louise Hay basically says that it's elbows and joints are about new directions and new experiences. And
okay.
I wrote on a thread the other day that I had projected new directions onto a friend of mine, and, you know, I was kind of focusing on telling them, you know, hey, you have an empty room, you should, you know, make it a woodworking room or a crafting room, or, you know, find something, you know, creative, a creative outlet, and, you know, and they're basically like, you know, yeah, all right, whatever, Goldie, you know, that's they've got other issues on their plate, and all of a sudden it hit me. It's like, holy shit, I'm projecting myself onto them. It's like, I really need to focus on Goldie. And what I got in the woods today was, when I'm in the woods focusing on myself, like today, like part of that mind control or whatever the frequency is, I can feel it. For me, it shows up as don't think about your own journey, focus on another's journey. And it makes me think that I'm doing this with all love, you know, and all the, in other words, this is bearing my gift to others. And but I'll be honest with you, but it's a lie. But it's a lie.
No, I love that you came into the awareness.
Okay, right on.
Of yourself.
Exactly.
Right.
Because
again,
because
the other way is the, it's just a, it's like it's a distortion.
It's forceful. It is a distortion.
I
am riddled with this distortion. It's like, you know, it's wonderful to do shows to share, and it's wonderful to share if someone asks me. If people don't ask me, and I, you know, to all of my friends, yourself included, Jay, you know, I sincerely apologize. You know, because you guys know me and I know me. I'm pushy. You know, I'm like, let's get some change happening. but I am truly learning, because as soon as I started thinking about, you know, somebody else in the forest, I swear to God, all of a sudden my elbow started aching and I went, oh, son of a bitch. Literally, after starting to think about them, my elbow started and I went, this is what this elbow is. And I'm really quite focused right now on, because the word is projecting, to not project my journey onto another.
Reel it in.
Yes.
Yeah. A lot of times, I think that's so true, because a lot of times I realize relationships with self are depleted because people are so over-involved with other relationships are incredibly important, but when your relationship with yourself is not as strong, depleted, you do that. You over focus on others, and it shows up as symptomatic then, you know. And I
right on.
It's like, okay, that's a real basic, you know, but it's a powerful basic, and it's like And you can feel someone go, when they get it, they're like, you actually can tell that they feel good. Because
yeah,
it's like,
absolutely. Yes.
Right. It's a validation of, oh, I can, okay, I'm myself. That's important. It's like, yes.
It's critical.
Actually.
It's critical.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. Good news.
Definitely.
Right. I like that.
And it's habitual. The one thing about the Matrix in general is it's relentless. It is so relentless because I can get this, but if I don't keep this at the tip of, you know, on top of the tip of consciousness, you know, if my elbow didn't hurt, I would have basically been on another tangent thinking about how I was going to help somebody else heal. And, you know, it's like, and again, it's not that I can't do that if they ask, but that should not be the go-to space that I'm in. The go-to space that I'm in is self. And what can I do to hear? I clearly have issues. Stay with yourself, Goldie. And I'll be honest with you. One of the things that I'm so excited about with the deprivation tank is it feels like, in all honesty, by removing all the sensory output, it will help me literally rewire my energy back into myself. Like, I'm sure I have wires out there plugged into all of you guys, all of my friends, especially the people that I speak with on the phone. Mm-hmm. I have wires plugged into you guys, and it's from quantum entangling with you guys, and it's a wonderful thing, and it's a horrible thing, because I'm not helping, I'm not assisting, I'm hurting both of us, or all of us. And in my recognition of that, I think it's going to be a fantastic experience that the deprivation tank, by spending significant time in it, that's why I'm not just going to a float place, but I'm buying one. Because I mean, you know me. I'm going to go balls to the wall. I'm going to spend significant time in this. I'm going to have massive breakthroughs. And then I can get on the air with you and share them. Well, but it's like, because what this feels like when I get this down, it will be such a because it's all I'm leaking energy and it's depleting you guys. You know, it's working still for the matrix. When I get this down, it will be working for the organic. You know, I have more of myself on the team I want to support.
Curious question: just did the isolation tank come after this, the mushroom trip? I mean, was this a new? This was a new find.
Like 3 or 4 days ago, I saw
a
video,
and
the way the guy described it, because it's so interesting, you know, kind of focusing again on what Lilu said about, you know, you can't get to the fifth dimension with shrooms. The deprivation tank has everything to do, quote unquote, with thinking, with thoughts. And you go, oh, well, why would you spend time on that when, you know, the soul is all about feelings? Mm-hmm. And I agree with that. But that's why what I believe the deprivation tank is going to rewire my thinking not to be on my reflections, which is what you guys are.
Yeah, and I'll tell you also, from my point of view, Goldie, you know how synapses are like
– brain.
And they connect
thoughts or energies, yes.
So
yes.
They're probably, you know, our – we're habitually in a space where, you know, can you turn it off? So I think what you're doing is you're putting yourself in a position to break the pattern of the habitual synapsing of, you know, because what it, you know, it will be interesting to see what the world feels like, is like for you as you change that, you know, and that's the curiosity
right
on my part.
Nice. Wonderful.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, it's really funny, just a little side note. I just realized, I was like, as you were talking and right before the isolation tank, but I thought to myself, in my story, I'm in the Yawning Rabbit River where you know, the jelly pain character.
Okay.
But there is a time when Lily and Tom find they're in the cave and they're hungry and a Penny Boy points to mushrooms and you know they're little white button mushrooms but I'm going that's interesting and in Alice in Wonderland there's the mushroom but you know so it's so interesting that in storytelling how the mushroom really shows up quite a lot, especially in children's stories. And I'm going, I had no mushrooms in the magic gown, but I have them in the Yawning Rabbit River. And I'm going, that's so funny that my characters eat mushrooms, you know. So,
Like there's a magical quality to them.
Yeah.
And the whole premise is these shouldn't be avoided. In other words, I don't think, for me, and I'm not saying go out there and do mushrooms, but if you find yourself in any situation that you'll know the second you're in a situation, you go, you know, shit, this is bad.
Right.
You know,
right.
And it could be anything. It doesn't have to even have, quote unquote, you know, a fourth dimensional feel to it. Any situation where the moment you go, okay, this is bad and I can't get out of it, the beauty of that, and if I can impart for you guys all to know, is you have the ability, and I promise you, whatever you're going to need, you've probably been, for lack of a better word, preaching to all your friends for them to do it, because it's like... The one thing I'm starting to really get just through literally years of observation of human behavior, because this is what I love to do, you watch human behavior. So have you ever seen the show Iyanla Fix My Life on the Oprah Network?
No.
Okay, it's exquisite. I highly recommend it.
Okay.
One of the things I get from watching this woman who does the work and then helps other people do the work is mothers, daughters, granddaughters, how literally if you don't heal the wounds of your childhood or DNA or culture,
right.
It is exactly what you do in the to the next generation. I mean,
I agree
exactly.
With that. Yeah.
And you as a therapist will probably agree with that.
Or just,
and so,
just knowing that, I feel that, you know, it's like, that's, you find that.
And you
that
can see it.
True.
I mean, she points it out, like, because she'll have a grandmother, a mother, where, you know, and it's like when you start seeing these things, you start having an understanding of that you're going to kind of be in the same situation on some level that your parents were in or your mother was in, but you can make it a different outcome. It's like this is the time and space of pure transformation. It's,
right,
it's
and
like,
aware, right, and transcending something.
There you go.
You transcend something when you're in a state of awareness in the situation that you can transcend it. It's like, you know, when you're not in a state of an awareness, you'll just be in it. But when you're in another, you know, and so that's that presence thing or the knowledge of it all, you know.
Yeah,
which is,
both. Exactly. And it's like, I don't think my mother was, you know, I don't think she was hanging out doing hallucinogens. But what she did have is she had fears she never faced. And if I can impart to you guys anything, take the challenge your life, leap off of proverbial cliffs intentionally, because I have learned my greatest strength through facing my greatest fears. And again, I don't necessarily do it intentionally. Some I have done intentionally. I mean, like when I moved to Buffalo, New York, I didn't know anybody there. I knew one guy who was the moving truck guy, who happened to also live there. But beyond that, I didn't know anybody, and that was the goal. Can I live somewhere where I don't have family and I don't have friends that I've known my whole life? So every choice I make will be fully on my shoulders. What would I create? Mm. And I went out and did it. You know, and after 8 months, I was poor, I was broke, I had to come home. But those 8 months showed me so much because I was also fantastically creative, very influential. And the thing that really took me down was I have a gossip archetype in me. I gossip, and when you gossip and you don't have any kind of support system behind you, your whole world can fall apart just from gossiping. And it's exactly what happened to me because nobody knew me long enough to support me and say, oh, well, you've got other good qualities. It's like, no, you gossip, you're out. And once I was out, it was like, after 4 months of creating what I created, it was all down the toilet. So, but it was an interesting, you know, it's like, we all have certain things that we're afraid of. And it doesn't have to be that you have to move to another state where you don't know anybody. You know, I have what I do. I have who I am, and this is something that as I turn inwards, I am learning that it can be, you could have a fear facing a family member telling them your spiritual beliefs. I mean, I think that's a fear for a lot of people. You could, you know, and I just recommend that, you know, push the envelope. Like, because here's another quote that I really like. I create my fearful expressions. Oh, no, wait, not that. No, that's not what I want to write. That's not what I want to read. Here. Oh, I seek fear. Wait, to seek fear is to seek your boundaries in your sensory experience. Did that make sense?
Say it again, please.
To seek fear is to seek your boundaries in your sensory experience.
Who said that? You know?
The holographic doctor on the Voyager said that.
Okay, I'm it's not one that I can really wrap around. Like, I don't, I'm kind of not grasping it, which is, I don't know why. You have to say
okay,
that.
Well,
to
okay,
seek
well,
fear,
to
maybe
seek
you should explain
fear.
It to me. Yeah.
Okay, well, to seek fear, I'm a fear seeker, because I'm an adventurist. You know, I'm hell-bent, and I'm using that word intentionally, I'm hell-bent to integrate my shadow side so
right.
I can, you know, do this supernova when Mother Earth goes supernova. So seeking fear is about seeking the boundaries of my sensory experience, because fear is very much coupled with the uncomfortable.
I was just thinking that as you were, because of,
yep.
of any time that I've sensed, you know, it's growing beyond comfort
exactly.
zone for sure. And
exactly.
you know, I know it's a story we've talked about, but clearly the example of just saying, I'm going to do a vision quest 3 nights out on the desert mountains by myself because I was afraid to.
Exactly.
What was
exactly.
a confrontation with that fear, and I was afraid. But what came out of that was transformational as an understatement, and I'm still feeling the wonderful ramifications or emanations of that decision to face that fear, which is,
right.
of course, yeah, I mean, it's like a life-changing experience, and so that's happened so many times, you know, where even on a small scale where you say yes to something, you know, whether it's a meeting or a travel experience or, you know, all right, I'll do this and it's out of my comfort zone. I can tell now, I'm like, oh, there's that feeling. And it's,
yeah.
like, it's like an energy. And I always remember, you know, I think I told you this story, but I called it fear. And Angelus said, no, it's anticipatory energy. You know, basically what I interpret as is your higher self, your soul is on point knowing this is transformational for you. And
absolutely.
It's a part of and you sense it. And it's like, so it's almost a tip off, like, okay, I know you're uncomfortable, but this is the signpost. Go do it. You know, so.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And it can be anything. Fears are not typically, because I can tell you, I used to want to die, and then when it came time to potentially die, and I'm not talking about the mushroom trip. I'm talking about something that transpired between me and Scott when he was drinking.
Right.
You know, I literally, it's like I would say I want to die, but then the truth is, okay, I don't want to die. And yet when his hands were around my neck, I literally
right.
just, I can remember, I completely collapsed and surrendered into, do it, man. I'm ready to die. Snap my neck. Do it.
Yeah.
And as soon as I did that, his whole body was literally thrown off my body. It was almost as if, I mean, it wasn't even as if. My presence or my higher self came into my body and went, no, she might be ready to die, but we're not ready to let her go.
you know, that scene was played out in Scent of a Woman with Al Pacino so well.
Oh, really?
Yeah, he was going to kill the young boy because he was distraught, and he said, you must, and the boy said, go ahead, do it, and he kill him, you know, and he was going to kill the boy, and
okay.
he couldn't do it. It changed everything.
It changes everything, exactly.
It's a great, well, first of all, that's a great movie because the speech that Al Pacino gives at the end about authenticity and integrity is
okay.
so awesome, it's worth watching. But in regards to what we're talking about, the scene of where Al Pacino goes to, you know, shoot him and it doesn't happen is a description of what you must have experienced, and it's amazing. And, you know, I mean, I love films, by the way, but that's just powerful, powerful stuff.
Right on. Well, because
yeah.
if you start having a template understanding to
yeah.
what is truly imprisoning us in this lifetime, because, it's almost similar to, you know, it doesn't have to be a fourth dimensional experience to know that, you know, maybe it's not about might versus right. you know, that, you know, it can show up. Yeah.
That is the riddle for the queen.
Yes, Queen Goldenrod.
You are queen of the kingdom, I thought.
Yes, and the truth is, because here's the crazy truth. The truth is, I love a good hurricane. It, you know, and how many of us do, right? How many of us are truly inspired by 150 mile an hour winds? We're not crawling under the, you know, the bed in fear. We're actually inspired in that. That's why there's really no, you can't give, the action itself is such a personal experience. Because you truly know what's keeping you bondage. You know, what has a hold on you? What belief? What what pattern way of being? And that's why the judgment of any of us for any of us is ludicrous, because it doesn't matter if you're, you know, if your fear is of heights or your fear is of your boyfriend being drunk and aggressive. You know, I mean, fear is fear, and there's a way to handle it for you. And I mean, like, the reason why I say that is, like, for me, I was such an antagonist my whole life. It wasn't, you know, because a lot of people might be going, well, you know, Scott put his hands around you, your neck, why don't you leave? And it's like, because I knew I was okay. You know, it. No man in heaven had ever done this, had ever put his hands on, you know, so I was more like, I needed humble pie in my life. That was, I needed someone strong enough to humbleize me. And, and in that I'm becoming whole and complete, you know, because George says it so well, that each of our journeys, you know, there is no set plan, you know, ABC for us, you know, to follow, in the sense of the actions. In my humble opinion, the templates, which is we've got to own our shadow side. You want to face your fears. You want to push the envelope of what makes you comfortable and uncomfortable. The whole idea of the comfort zone, in my humble opinion, is a dead zone. You know, because growth takes place in that comfort zone. And that's why, personally, I used to justify projecting myself, because I was like, I don't care if you guys get pissed at me. I'm going to keep pushing you. And, you know, and I'm sure there were some times when my pushing was welcomed, and because I can feel it, to be quite honest. And sometimes when it was like, you know, Goldie, that's your gig. That's not my gig. And I'm truly learning that ultimately I don't want to push at all, because I could, like I said, I can truly see that I have trouble differentiating between helping and projecting. And just to know that, what I'm at this point, what I'm doing is just pulling all cords in. You know, it's like I'm just going to stay quiet for a while. And I'm happy if you guys, if you want to ask me something, please feel free to do so. And if not, you know, I'm just pulled in right now, because I can honestly tell you that I'm not totally comfortable to say that I can just listen without replying. I can't, because I get triggered all over the place, and then I shift my energy. And that's why I think the best solution for me is to do the self-inwardness of the tank. Because, you know, then let, you know, I'll battle it out there. And once I come out of that, you know, I'll be a different person. I won't be triggered by things, you know,
or you won't. And it's fine too. You know what I mean? That's what we do. I mean, it's, you know, tonight you're offering, I think, on a personal level, what you came out with, understanding yourself and the mind control that affects you. And, but it also is a template, and that's the word I was thinking of. And, you know, as far as on a personal level, it's important, but on a share level, it then gives the people the benefit of what you learned going through this initiation. I mean, I enjoy that personally. I like that. You know, I think that there's time and place where we go through something and we integrate it and we're, and then you put it out there like a piece of art. You know, it's
Right on. Like a piece of art. I like that.
Like a piece of art. So, you know, and you'll know when, you know, it's kind of like knowing you do a painting and it'll sit there and a couple weeks goes by and you keep working, you know, and you don't even think it's done. I don't know if it's done, whatever it's done. And then someday it is done and then you go, oh, okay. And, you know, you put it out there. But, or I sometimes take a picture of a painting in its undone place and I'll post it on Facebook and, you know, this is a process.
Nice.
This is a process.
Yeah.
You know,
no,
and
definitely,
so,
babe. Definitely.
Right. And what?
Well, and I am hell-bent. See, I just want you guys to know, I don't just push you guys. I pushed me, too, because I don't know. Until this supernova happens, for me, it just feels like, get on it, Goldie. You got to get on it.
Well, you know, Goldie, you know, you gave me incredible smiles, and I'm like, queen of the kingdom. I like that. You know, every time you say something that's like answering the riddle, like forget pushing, you know, I'm going, that's the queen talking, you know, it's
right, it's
a wisdom thing. It's a, you know, it's an archetype of, you know, a deep knowing. I mean, I think it's honestly like the fact that you actually came up with Queen of the Kingdom, I just was like, that's amazing.
And for me, the word I've been using lately is I'm maturing.
Okay, and that's queen because you're not princess of the kingdom.
And that's funny because you're right. And, you know, for me, princess was all about being the brat. So that's
exactly right. Of course. But
yeah.
The queen is the mature archetype versus the princess, you know. But it's very rich. Like,
Thank you.
It's just funny, too, that it's, you know, with the assistance of mushrooms. I find that if you look at my book and you see the drawings that David did of mushrooms, they have little faces. You know, I love mushroom drawings. I think they're so beautiful, but I also love when they're, you give them a personality and, you know,
yeah.
Like how kids' books, the flowers have faces and, when the mushrooms have faces, I was like writing them going, can you do more of those? They're so amazing. So I'm smiling going, you know, Goldie partnered with some mushrooms and look at it. I mean, it's pretty, it's intense. It's, and to me, it is like a thesis. It's like a four-hour in-depth, going into the abyss of yourself, but also coming out with some really beneficial awarenesses, you know.
Well, you know that I had some fears about, you know, getting on a spaceship.
Oh, I know.
Because I think it's so interesting how the fourth dimension absolutely is about playing havoc in our lives.
My whole life, I think my childhood was totally fear of that dimension, not knowing it though.
Okay.
And I think
for years
being held back by a kind of abstract fear that I didn't know. And that is the fear. That realm is the fear because
yes, me too.
I remember I had a very intuitive friend who said to me, and I told you this, that she said, you know, Jay, she called me Jay, you're someday going to have to face that. And I would be like, quiet. Maybe I'm going to fly. She was right.
Of course,
right.
Of course. And that's for all of us that are going through the process of the incension, ascension, fifth dimension, continuing on. But I'll tell you, the beautiful part is when, for those of us that are going through it, it's definitely a havoc-wreaking experience on one hand, and on the other hand, it is so, it's a paradigm changer. because
right.
You apply the wisdom that you got in the third dimension, and it works in the fourth dimension. You know, it's like, you know, because it was from listening to George and reading books that, you know, I kind of figured out, okay, this is a game of acceptance. You know, it's like, because if, you know, and again, if somebody's not ready for this wisdom, if you go into the fourth dimension fighting, just look at Neo and Mr. Smith at you know, whenever they had their battles. Until
right.
Neo went into Mr. Smith, or Mr. Smith went into Neo,
right.
It's really just, right? They were banging up and, you know,
yeah.
knocking each other down, and he kept going, you're getting back up. It's like, he's getting back up, because it's not physical. It's quasi-physical. You can't break a bone.
But he was learning. He was learning. He was, you know, he was
absolutely.
He was figuring it out, you know. And it's a funny thing because...
That's exactly right, Janine.
In regards to mind control, you know, both personally set up mind control, but also then the outer influences of mind control. You know, it's
okay.
like the ultimate... control button for kids is, you know, be afraid of the boogeyman. Well, I don't really think kids come up with be afraid of the boogeyman necessarily on their own, but that's a big manipulation that, you know, people can use to hold a kid hostage to, you know, and that archetype, that thing grows, you know, and can kind of plague you your whole life, you know, or...
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
Right. So inevitably... You know, the awareness of, gee, I'm just not going to buy into that anymore. You know,
or you'll face the boogeyman.
Well, you—that's what I mean. You inevitably—that's usually what you have to do in order to not buy into it anymore.
Because remember, the boogeyman is what was created from self, from the child. It is your boogeyman.
Yeah. So
because we were afraid of it.
Right, but it's also I noticed. You know, like Goldie, I was telling you, and you were so happy to hear that. You know, when I go in and there, I'm getting to work with poetry and imagination. And when I heard the kids doing these poems in front of these 86 kids in eighth grade in this town.
Talk about
this,
babe. Tell the details of this. This is worth telling. Tell.
Right, because
this
came up when we were you and I were having the conversation on Monday. I said to you that one of the most extraordinary things happened. I did not expect. Someone said to me, hey, would you come to this local school that's in a town that I know is riddled with drugs and alcohol and poverty and it just challenge, you know? So I said, of course, the eighth grade's having a poetry slam. So, you know, I'm going, oh, that's really nice. You know, wow, poetry slam. So I go, and this whole auditorium is set up. And I go with, like, you know, microphone and a podium and seats. And I go, how many poems are there? And they go, 86. And I was like, I knew it was one of those moments where I was witnessing something that was transformational and impressive for me because I was a kid that wrote poetry in secret and hid it. And now here it is. And, you know, 86 kids are going to stand up and deliver an original poem. And I was just literally, like, talk about humbled and awed and, you know, I couldn't believe it. I was like, you know, 12 miles from my house, I'm going, this is awesome. And kids got up and they, you know, they delivered, like, a poem called Alcohol or Alcoholic or, you know, something about, you know, his mother dying or abuse or, and, you know, most of it was really delivering some real feeling and some of it was playful. Some of it was sports related, but I still like when I know something amazing's happening, I know when something's amazing. It's happening.
You do.
I was in that audience. And they asked me to be like a guest judge, you know, and then it was just the teachers and me. And I'm going, to me, that was phenomenal. It was just, like, still to this moment, I go, that was awesome because that happened out of nowhere, you know, but did it. You know, all my life right. has been working towards this. And, you know, I just kept, like, I was like, you know, didn't fall to tears, but almost did. And then I love this one kid. Like, I went to talk to him, and he looked at me.
That's the story I wanted to tell. Okay, good.
So, he was so, like, I couldn't really read him, but he wouldn't smile. He just looked at me with this, like, I don't know who you are. He wouldn't align with me at all, and I just let it go. You know, and one of the teachers saw it, and she looked at him, and she goes, hey, you know, she just spoke to you, and he just wouldn't change. I mean, something was going on for him. I don't know if he was nervous. I don't know if he just didn't want to give me any kind of, you know, acknowledgement. Like, he didn't know me, you know, and so I right. said, no, it's fine. I totally respect that. You know, I like that kind of, like, holding their energy. It's a young man. Well, okay, he got up. And I had no feelings for this guy in terms of, like, animosity. It was complete respect. And I've been in these situations where, you know, I've said to some young guy, hey, here's some things, you know, write a poem. And they're like, no. and I'm like, okay. I'm like, I can respect that completely because, to me, these are the true leaders of tomorrow. And I go, consider writing a poem why you don't want to write a poem, but if you don't want to, I completely respect that. So
you're good with people, Janine. You are so good with people. I just have to say that.
Thank
okay,
you.
Keep going.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
So 86 kids go, and this young man gets up with a buddy, and they deliver a joint. They go back and forth. So it was co-created. They deliver a poem that was amazing. Like, hands down, you know, I had picked 18 out of the 86 full, like, wow, the standout. You know, everybody else, like, you know, really good, really good, really good, but standout. And these two guys, like, it was awesome. And they're talking, you know, Frederick Douglass. And the power in their delivery, the humor, the intelligence, they were ready. I mean, and, you know, they won. I mean, every teacher and me went, yes, they win. And then I had my own perception of who second, third, and fourth. And I picked a boy that, another boy that I thought was really gifted and has a true poet nature. Turns out, you know, they said, he scares us. He came at me with, like, scissors. And, you know, see, what was interesting about that was, I had no perception of him that way. Like, I knew no history of this other boy. And right. I saw poet genius in him. And whatever's going on in his house, I know is rough. But I saw a talent, and I saw this gift, and I just said to them, listen, I don't know his history. I respect what you need to do for you. But I am telling you, I saw this in him. And the teacher said to me, I'm going to tell him that you said that. And I was like,
nice.
Great. So,
nice.
You know, who knows what that does for someone, because I know if I was him at 13, that would have made a difference, you know, someone acknowledging, right? So,
yeah. Well, and
anyway.
Remember, a published author acknowledged, not just a teacher,
right,
but,
right,
you know,
right.
there's some, you know, cleverage? No, what? Leverage. Leverage.
Leverage, right, right.
Yeah.
Right.
Yes.
So this was like Thursday, May 29th, where, you know, out of nowhere, you just know that there are these moments in your life where, you know, yeah, and I've gone through anguish and, you know, keep going, Janine. Keep going, Janine. You know, my own worst enemy, me. Surprise, Goldie. surprise. Anyway, my own worst enemy, me, laying there going, you know, I love when I go, could have been worst night ever. and I'm like, well, Janine, do you remember that other night? I'm like, yeah, okay. You know, could have been worse than I ever.
So cute.
But anyway, here you are, and you know, you see these moments, and you say, "Hey, you know, this is special. This is something's happening." And
yes.
I love that. It's one of my favorite statements. And it's funny.
You truly do say it impactful. Well,
right,
and it's such a subtle, impactful moment that
right.
Because I know when you say it for me, it's like, oh, Goldie, get your antenna up, you know. And then as soon as you say it, I'm like, oh, because I'll just fly
something
right by
happening.
It sometimes.
Right.
Yeah, something
right.
is
right.
happening.
Right.
Exactly.
And you know, and it's funny because
exactly.
on Monday I did another school. And again, you know, drove out there. They gave me flowers at the end, which was delightful.
Oh,
that one had a
nice.
Stargazer lily in it. But I found myself, you know, showing them my doorways, and the keys are being hidden, and the keys in the door. Then there's no more key, and there's no more lock. And I go, "Do you see? Do you see how something was happening?" And guess what? All the faces, including the teachers, were like. Yeah.
Nice.
It was so great. It was so great. Yeah.
Nice.
So these are moments, you know, and they're
yep.
happening a lot. They're happening often and
collectively.
You know,
they're happening collectively.
Yes.
They are.
Yes.
Yes.
And
yes.
you know, you're for me, even our conversation Monday was again, it was like, wow. You know, coming off of your experience, which I didn't know the details, but
the trip.
The trip.
Bad trip. Yeah. Yes.
But honestly, you know, I will not forget the Queen of the Kingdom. You know that. I mean, it's just
I
so
love it.
Perfect.
I love it. Well, you know, but everything is so perfect because, you know, it's
yeah.
so interesting because and I know Lilu's listening to this. Hi, Lee. I love you, girlfriend. I love your posts. I love your shares. I love your energy. Because one of the things that if I could impart to everyone listening, is that we should look at our fear and our challenges as such an integral part of our journey. It is not a successful life to always go around.
Oh,
it's a
boy,
challenge.
That's a good one, Goldie.
Right? Right?
Yeah.
Because
yeah.
because it something's happening. Well, because I can't tell you how if you guys knew me prior to being 30, I mean, it's so funny. I've always had this kind of presence of like a knowingness that things were multidimensional and
mm-hmm.
and just something like going on behind the curtain kind of thing. But from birth to 30, I was so afraid of everything.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and it's like, because, and it's like I'm really, truly understanding that it's like the journey is to go out from our, like our soul self, and the further out we get, the more afraid we become. And then you reach, there is a point where it's like a rubber band and it's physics, it's literally science, that you go out so far and then the journey of coming back home begins.
Yeah.
And then what we fear is ourselves, you know, because it's so, it's like what I feared was that I couldn't be loved, I wasn't pretty enough, I wasn't smart enough. And it's so funny because now, those aren't my fears, and well, I'm dealing with the fears that I created in my childhood, that I created from 12 years of doing drugs. You know, it's like I've played in so many arenas where literally it's like the cocktail of fear, because cocaine will drain you of all goodness and make you just a bowl of paranoia. I mean, especially if you're doing it on a daily basis, because when it taps into your brain, a certain hormone or whatever, once that hormone is released before it's replenished, if you tap it again, becomes paranoid as opposed to pleasurable.
Right.
So, you know, and I can remember saying, you know, towards the end of my drug career, wow, what have I created by thinking all those paranoid thoughts for all those years? Like, how will that affect me? You know, I didn't know. And, you know, and then I take mushrooms, open the door, and it's like, oh, there it is.
All those
paranoid thoughts waiting for me behind door number one. You know, it's like, but there really is something delicious about it. At, like I said, once we start getting to understand that, you know, it's all about ourselves, and I must say that I can't speak about, you know, I'm not quite sure how this applies to people like who have had abduction experiences, and because I don't think it applies to them, because I'm starting to really understand, too, the more I pull my energy in, that the way I share my journey is a template for some, but it is not a template for all. And I used to think it was a template for all.
I
just know there's something about, you know, not, I don't know if everybody's fears is their own creation. I can't say I know that. I just know that for myself. But I can't say that that's a definite for everybody. I think there might be a contract to experience those, but maybe it's from another lifetime. See, again, I don't have enough fourth-dimensional playtime. You know, I get it when I do magic mushrooms, even though I think I'll probably get more information on that as I do the deprivation tank, because it will... Because here's the way I've been thinking about it. The deprivation tank is literally like I'm going to practice dying. I like the giggle, babe. And here's the crazy part. I am stoked to practice dying.
It's ironic to practice dying is to live, be living is to, you know,
exactly.
There's something, yeah, experimental about, you know.
Well, and ironic because I've been suicidal.
That, you know.
Yeah, it's all coming back full circle. It makes total sense to me. Because of my journey, I mean, I have been playing with death, whether through drugs just through drugs or thoughts.
Right.
And yeah, of course, the deprivation tank is going to help me understand all of that on a deeper level. It might not make me totally understand, but it's funny too, because even Robert Monroe popped up recently. Someone shared something Robert Monroe. That might have been Lily too. I don't know. Somebody shared Robert Monroe, and I laugh because, you know, I'm like, to have a lucid death experience. For me, I have one of my mantras is that, you know, some people say I want to die in my sleep. Some people say I want to die quickly. Some people say I want to live to 100. I don't say any of those things. I simply say that. When I die, I will consciously walk out of my body. I will just walk out. It will be effortless and seamless for me to go from one dimension to the next dimension, it'll be seamless because I've explored it in any way, shape, or form that I can. And The deprivation tank definitely, you know, it's like, because it's so funny, you know, everybody, I'm always saying, you know, to people, you know, most people when they die, we've been programmed to look for the light. And in my humble opinion, the light is a trap. It is fourth dimensional beings that don't want you to connect with your soul. So
right.
They take you into their light, the artificial light, and they basically show you a life review. They tell you all the places, quote unquote, that you went wrong, and now you got to go back and fix it. And again, this is remember what I said about mind control playing with guilt. That light is playing with guilt because, you know, when we were talking about things people are afraid of, I find a lot of people tend to be afraid to make mistakes. And
oh, yeah.
Mistakes. are the kind of things that, depending on your perception,
mm-hmm.
will make it either a mistake or an experience. And one of the major components of that perceptional change is forgiveness of self.
Right.
Because you do not need forgiveness of the other. You need forgiveness of self. Because when you've forgiven yourself, that mistake can become the catalyst for your great purpose.
That was one of mine for sure, and layers of it. You know, it's not just, I figured that out. No, it's an ongoing thing, and it's become much more, like, the awareness of it is, like, so much greater now, and, you know, moved through so much of that. But I remember Angela Sarian, you know, almost, there are certain lines, like taglines or something, where the other side of afraid to make mistakes is the need to look good. And I really felt that.
That's a very good point.
Difficult for me to accept that, but I realized that is something I had to deal with too, and that is all about mistakes, and
programming
and programming.
In fact, was it the Hermann Hesse
definitely inherited that.
but all of us, I'll be honest, all of us, maybe you might have, you know, that might play a bigger part or a more, more focused area. Because, you know, it's like, if you look at the programming of the religions, and it's not just the religions, it's also the education, they both kind of speak of like that there's an action that is right, there's an action that is wrong.
Right,
if you do this right, you do this wrong. But when you come from soul, you know, unconditional love could literally be letting someone hit bottom.
Yeah,
and that is the
highest
form of love to give them.
Right, and what's astounding is to realize that you're living in such a fear of making mistakes or the letting go of the need to look good, that it almost is, you don't even realize that it's almost phobic. It's not easy. It's like when you took the mushrooms, not easy. But when you start to really get that, it's like, thank God. You know,
it's freeing. You feel
very freeing, and mind controlling, you know, really letting go of being in the organic.
The poet. You become a poet.
And how again, you know, self-loving to realize, you know, oh my God, this is all bullshit. You know,
exactly.
Exactly.
All that I thought meant so much means nothing. It has no value. not organically. I mean.
right. So, well, you know, so yeah, I mean, you've witnessed them with me too, where, you know, I've been in anguish.
Oh, yeah.
And it's about how to break through the, it's okay to make mistakes. It's okay to, you know, not look good. It's just like, you know.
And I would even, Janine, go as far to say it's imperative to make mistakes. And it's imperative to not look good.
Absolutely. The artist,
it's
the poet, always makes mistakes.
Yes.
I mean, that's actually the beauty. I saw somewhere that, you know, perfection is, this is, I'm paraphrasing now, but it's like perfection insults the soul.
Rapes,
you know,
the soul. Rapes, she
rapes
said.
Rapes the soul. That was fabulous.
Perfection rapes the soul. Exactly.
Yeah. And I just because when I see something, an over-manicured lawn, or like, I go, no.
Yep. Yeah. Can't we let a little bit just grow wild? She comes to our house. The whole front yard is wild.
So I really think, Goldie, it's so, you know, it's like, duh, obvious. Yes, fear of making mistakes, need to look good. But, boy, it feels really good once you go through the rough times and start really breaking that down, you know?
The initiation of self. That's what it becomes, because the initiation of self understands that the programs have us programmed to literally be, quote unquote, and you can quote me on this, anti-life. anti-life.
Yes.
That's what.
Yes.
So if you make mistakes, that's usually what you're doing is you're now responding, affirming life instead of anti-life.
Completely.
So the mistakes are the wisdom.
Wonderful.
On how to get out of the matrix. That's why they're so important to make, because the program we've been set up with, it is not in our best interest. The only way to leave, but it's, you can't, you know, leaving it is a whole, it's a whole nother show. You know, but it's definitely, it's like, make mistakes, don't be perfect, and then when you have the sustained presence in yourself post those quote unquote mistakes, then share them, you know, whether on a radio show or with your friends or even, dare I say, with family members who are still extremely caught up in the program of anti-life.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
Share it with them, because even if they don't respond initially, I truly believe we're planting seeds, because it becomes the frequency of who we are that speaks louder than our words. It really is.
It's so funny. I had this dream. This is so funny, really funny feeling, but like going, that is so interesting. I had a dream last night, and I was in the dream. I must have went to dinner with some people, and then the next morning I'm like talking to someone going, how come I don't remember anything that happened? Like I'm going, what happened? And they're like, that I drank, or, and they go, yeah, and you took all your clothes off. I'm going, I did? Oh, and then I'm thinking, and why I thought of that dream was, I just, when you were talking about telling the family, I was like, expose yourself.
Yeah, transparency.
Dare to expose yourself. You know, and I'm thinking, so I took all my clothes off in the dream. Okay, so I guess, you know, lesson, expose yourself. And I was like, I did last night in the dream.
Nice. No, that's huge.
I know.
And especially since you didn't wake up in shame from it. That's the key.
It was more of a mystery. I was like, okay, so that is so interesting. I can't remember, but they said I took off my clothes, and I'm like, naked?
I love it. I love it. I love the symbolism of it.
Me too. Yeah. It's like expose yourself, you know, and I only remembered it because you were telling the story, and then
nice.
Isn't that funny how things work?
Yeah, it triggered it. Yeah, no, definitely.
Yeah.
Well, and triggers, man. God love our trigger. No more God talk. I get it, because, it's so funny. You're not supposed to say God's name in vain. Oh, fuck God, man.
I agree with George. What did he say? Thank goodness.
Thank goodness. No, and he's absolutely, because I do want to share something. This is a little intimate, but I'm going to share it because it's so apropos for kind of everything we're talking about, from the whole idea of, you know, because everything I do is about leaving the matrix. It's as simple as that. So so me and Scott have been going through our own issues where we are not as sexually active, nowhere near as sexually active in 2014 as we have been in the past. What happened recently, I actually haven't told anybody this. I haven't had the right time, and what better time than to share it on the air? So, you know, I kind of say like what most people say, you know, in the midst of having sex and feeling amazing, it's, oh, my God. You know, I verbalize that. But this time, I didn't say it out loud. I just, in my head, I was going, you know, thank you, Earth. Thank you, Earth. Oh. I'm grounded in this. And here was the amazing thing. I didn't say thank you, Goddess. It was literally, thank you, Mother Earth, for allowing me to feel every ounce of this pleasure that I'm feeling. And when I said that, I literally became so aware of my whole body. It immediately showed me how, since forever in this lifetime, I would leave my body during sex. It's like It is such an easy route to just go, pop, you're out. You're out of your body.
That's a great noticing.
Well, it's so funny when sex becomes a scientific project and you're only, you know, I can count on one hand how many times we've had sex in 2014, which is, that alone is amazing because that was never the case with me. You know, it's always been such a, you know, a tangling aspect of my life. It's brought me pleasure, but it's brought me great confusion and great pain. And
right.
But this year, that clarity, when I wasn't giving my energy to this God, which, you know, truly siphons off the orgasmic energy.
Yeah, yeah, even the verbalization of it, right? Yeah.
Exactly. Well, and it's funny because I didn't know. Scott, in all his beauty, is very sensitive. If I say certain things, it can turn him off and he'll just stop in the middle. That's why I was like, I wasn't going to say, thank you, Mother Earth, in the middle. But I was literally in my head, because I could hear in my head myself going, oh, my God. It's like, no, don't say that, Goldie.
Mm-hmm.
Say, oh, my earth, or something. I just know I was focusing on Mother Earth, and what it did was I didn't leave my body. So I became the same witness that I was in the mushroom trip. I was like witnessing myself in my body having sex, and oh, my God, it was – oh, there it is. See, this is – oh, my earth, it was good.
We got to catch ourselves. We got to catch ourselves.
Yes. No, I do have to catch myself because it actually changed the experience when I said it differently. And,
sure,
you know, I'm like,
frequency, you know?
Absolutely. And focus because everything about earth grounds me. I'm always grounded when I think of her. And it's so funny. It was just so... You know, I know I sound like a head case, and on some level I am a head case.
I don't think so.
Aw, you're sweet, babe. I mean, I shouldn't be thinking, you know, aren't we supposed to just lose ourselves when we have sex? To be honest, I've been able to lose myself, but I've done it by leaving my body.
Right, right. Like, I think that's a big difference, you know.
I don't want to do that anymore. Yeah.
Right,
let me feel all of it. This is...
Yeah.
And it was beautiful. I mean, it was – I wanted to tell Scott, and I was like, no, he's just not going to understand.
Right.
I didn't know who to tell. I mean
– Can I ask you, was that also after the mushrooms? Was that after?
Let me think.
Just curious about the whole –
Yes, it was. Yes, it was. Yeah, it was last week, so, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
No, there's something about the confidence and letting go of the fear or the facing of the fear or, you know,
It's changing the pattern of my behaviors almost.
Yeah.
It's extrapolating, you know, so I'm not leaving my body during sex and, you know.
The quality of presence to me. It's you know, so, and that just covers across the board, the quality of presence.
Exactly. Exactly.
You know, I think
right on.
Good.
Yeah, it was, oh my goodness, it was yummy. You know, now I probably won't be able to get any again for another month, but so be it. No, it's all good. God, I can tell when I get fired, because I was going to say it again, but I'm like, I gotta get out of that. I will. I'm gonna.
You will.
I will.
I'm standing on my back porch that's screened in, and it looks out over, you know, all this beautiful green, and there's a little chipmunk sitting right here. So cute.
Well, you know my chipmunk. You know my picture I have on the chipmunk that I posted on Facebook.
Does he have stuffed cheeks?
That was one of the pictures, but I posted several times two chipmunks having sex, saying, me and Scott do a chipmunk style.
That's right.
It doesn't surprise you that. Yeah, exactly.
There he is. But he's
there
like,
it
oh,
is. Thanks,
he's
buddy.
He's having alone time.
Nothing wrong with that. You go.
Nope.
You go, Chip or Dale. I wonder who it is. Outstanding. I mean, we're 4 minutes away from the end of the show.
Yeah.
You're exquisite. I really do my best work with you, Janine, and I'm so grateful to have
you.
So grateful. You're very welcome. We're good together. We're good together.
Yeah.
Oh, my earth, we're good together.
Well, thank you. It's been
share where people can buy your books and your pictures and your art. Sure, sure.
Okay, well, I'm on Facebook. So I think it's Janine Leighton Kimmel, but you can just go on Goldie's Friends and find me there. And I have a website. It's jlkimmel.com. K-I-M-M-E-L. And, my books are, you can get the title of the books on there, The Magic Gown and the Yawning Rabbit River Chronicle. And they're actually in Barnes & Nobles and Amazon. And, and also you can always contact me and say hello by email and, ask me questions and see if you want to, if you just have something you want to ask me about, initiation art and all things like that. So
you're welcome. And I want the audience to know definitely Janine is an exquisite counselor, therapist. Describe the type that you do? Yeah.
Transpersonal therapy or wellness counselor, but it's really about guiding or helping or encouraging any state of transformation and not being afraid to know that you can trust yourself in this process, because I think that's what we've bought into, is that, just like you experienced, it's about self, and self's not going to take you through a transformation for the wrong reason. It's all good, and I encourage that. And I'm a voice through that. So
absolutely. Yeah. I'll be honest with you. You initiated me to finally start feeling my shadow work. I mean, it was our friendship and you personally, helping me that got me here. And I'm forever grateful for that, truly, forever grateful. Plus, everybody, she's a phenomenal listener. And to be quite honest, there's really not many seasoned veteran good listeners out there. And I'm sure we all know that. Everybody's got something to say. Janine, she listens and you can feel her listening, which is, for me, that was very confirming and affirming. You're welcome. You're welcome. And I'll be honest with you, that alone is worth talking to her. But her responses are intuitive. She's very intuitive. And like I said, she doesn't try and get you out of your bad space. She just helps you see how the glory of being where you are is because you're doing your work. As Iyanla would say, you're doing the work.
Or where you are is very interesting. And I am interested in the details. The details matter to me.
You're beautiful. So between paintings and therapy work and exquisite literature, Janine's the whole package. So highly recommend checking out her stuff.
Thanks. And I'm going to, for fun, post those little smiling mushrooms on Facebook.
Oh, nice. Okay. Right on.
Everyone.
No, this is such a good show. No, thank you. Listen, tomorrow's a big day. It's a summer solstice. There's a lot of energy.
Right.
This show could have gone either way, but the truth is presence showed up.
Yeah.
We shared what we shared, and we weren't cut off. We exposed a little bit more, and we presented a little bit more of who we are authentically, and that's all I can ever ask for. To me, that's always a great show. So thank you.
Good.
Thank you.
Oh, you're welcome, Queen of the Kingdom.
Thank you, Lily.
I love that. I do.
Yeah, I do. We'll have fun with this for a while. So I don't know the next show. Actually, I can tell you the next show that I'm starting to plan is the guys I am buying the Zen float deprivation tent from. I'm already in contact with them. We're going to try and set up a show, and so we'll have the next show coming up will be all about deprivation tank stuff. So I'm excited about that.
Yeah.
All right?
Yeah.
All right. You have a fantastic night. Thank you, my brilliant audience. I love you guys. I love, love, love you guys. Everybody be well. Happy summer solstice. May all your shadows dance back into your heart because that's where they belong. I love you guys.
Love you too. All right.
All right.
Bye.
We'll speak to everybody soon. Bye now.
Love you all. Gotta go.
Bye.
I'm so glad we had
time together. Started, and before you know it.